710 ESPN Seattle presents Mariners Legends Week.
Swing and drive deep to left field.
Celebrating the greatest moments in franchise history with the players who define Mariners baseball.
Get out the ride, Brandon!
It is Mariner Legends Week happening here on 710 ESPN Seattle. It's Bob, Dave, and Moore with you. Michael Bumpus in for Jim Moore. And it's a pleasure to bring this man to the program. I remember being a young intern in this business when they told me, Bob, don't ask any questions. Just stick your mic out there and get sound. Don't say anything stupid. So I used to do that when this guy would speak, and I was always very intimidated. But he was always very friendly, intense but friendly. And he's with us now, Jamie Moyer. Jamie, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well. That was quite a story. I like that. I'm gonna be that way today now. Okay? Don't do anything stupid, and I'm going to let you take control.
What was that like for you? I used to always wonder, especially when I first got into it, there'd be a crowd of us, we're reporters and people like me who are just sitting there with a microphone not asking questions. But there might be, I don't know, 10 of us hovering around you because you were the starting pitcher that night. And you would often look at, I think you were looking at the box score, you were looking at some of the stats from the game before you'd talk to us. But was that annoying? Would you be looking at this crowd going, oh, man, I got to talk to all these dopes? You know what was that like for you?
I didn't mind it when everybody came prepared and had legit questions to ask. And that always didn't happen, unfortunately. So, and it, you know, it's not necessarily for me to judge, but it's part of my job, part of my responsibility as a player to talk about whatever the subject matter is that you guys bring up. But there are many a times I could tell sometimes when somebody comes in and they're not really sure about the question they want to ask, or they're not sure about the question they're asking. And that doesn't make me feel good because I don't want to do their job. You know, I'm trying to do my job. I don't need to try to do somebody else's job. So, but you know what? There were many of the Seattle people or writers or, you know, people that followed us that we're very prepared and asked a lot of great questions. So, you know, for the most part, I didn't mind it at all, and realized that it was my responsibility as a player.
Hey, Jamie, I'm looking at your career. It's just amazing. I obviously played the wrong sport. For me, 9 years in the NFL was not enough. I wanted to play, you know, 10, 12, 25 years, man. I mean, at the end of your career, were you more like, okay, I'm done, I'm ready for this, or what, was it difficult? How was that transition?
Yeah, I think it's, if you enjoy your job and you have passion for your job, when that final day comes, nobody's going to enjoy that, right? But if you hate your job, you probably can't wait to quit or retire, right? So, right. You know, it was hard for me, but, you know, when I was leaving the game, 2012, I was with the Rockies. I had just recovered from a Tommy John surgery, had missed the season before 2012. I didn't pitch that well. I got released early in the season. The team wasn't doing well. So, I mean, it wasn't the funnest of seasons to start, you know, or funnest way of starting off a season. But, you know, for me, after I got released from the Rockies, I did two short minor league stints. And I couldn't have predicted this, but I'll tell you what, it was the best way for me to leave the game. I went to Norfolk and pitched three games and actually pitched, I thought, really well. But it just didn't work out. And it really, pitching those three games and being in that back in that minor league environment brought back so many great memories of the beginnings of my professional career in the minor leagues. And then I pitched three games for the 51s, which was in Las Vegas, which at the time was the Toronto Blue Jays. And I didn't pitch as good there, but I still really enjoyed the camaraderie that I saw with the players and the passion they had. And it was just a fun way to leave the game because it's the exact same way that I came into the game.
Hey, Jamie, I'm kind of piggybacking off of what Dave asked you. Now, 25 years in the game. I mean, started in the 80s, ended in 2012. What did you do for your body? Did you kind of just stick to a regimen that you developed early in your career, or did you kind of change with the times that you got more information?
Yeah, it evolved over the course of my career. And as I got older, I realized I couldn't do some. I used to like to run a whole lot. And I started having some, I wouldn't say back issues, but some soreness. And, you know, I just wasn't healing. You know, as we all realize this as we get older, you don't heal as quick. You don't recover as quick. So I had to find different ways of training, and I actually did. I started changing my my weight workouts and started working way smarter. And not that I ever lifted heavy weights, but I just started working smarter. And then for my cardio, I started to do a lot of work in the water, where I was actually, I wasn't completely submersed under the water, but most of my body was under the water. And I'd run on a treadmill and things like that, so I didn't have the pounding on my hips and my back and my knees and my ankles. So, you know, and then, you know, I like to throw a lot too. So I had to back off in that as the repetition started to build up throughout my career. But, you know, it's like anything, you know, you gain information, you gain experience, and you gain knowledge, and you start to work smart. You don't work harder, you work smarter.
Jamie, you came over to the Mariners in the 96 season. You were coming from Boston. What, do you remember what your thoughts were when you were coming to Seattle? Seattle, the Mariners hadn't had any success at that point, truly. I mean, they're coming off the 95 season, but just historically, we're not a team like the Yankees or the Red Sox or any of these other teams that everybody knows of success. Do you remember what your feelings were? Like, oh, this is going to be great, or, oh, man, I'm going to play in the dome.
I was elated to come to the Mariners because I didn't really feel like in Boston I was getting the opportunity that I was hoping to have. You know, I was, when I made that team out of spring training, I was kind of the sixth man in a five man rotation and the seventh man in a six man bullpen. So I didn't really have a job description, but I got some spot starts. I pitched some long relief and I eked out a couple wins here and there. I pitched okay. I didn't pitch great, but you know, we had some opportunities where I could have started and they chose other people and, you know, that was their choice. I didn't hold it against them. But I felt like I was prepared for that opportunity. It wasn't like I felt like I was supposed to be given that opportunity. I just felt like I was prepared for those opportunities. Didn't get those consistent opportunities. And when I found out I was going to be traded to the Mariners, and when I walked in the door, Lou said, "Are you ready to pitch?" And I said, "Of course I am. I'm ready to go." And you know what? I never looked back. And, you know, what a great opportunity it was to get the ball every 5 days. I really did not mind pitching in the Kingdome. A lot of people hated pitching in the Kingdome. I did not mind pitching in the Kingdome. And pitching in front of the offense that we had or behind the offense that we had wasn't too bad either. It was probably one of the better teams that I had played on at that point in my career that had the offensive prowess that, you know, it was probably the best team at that point that I had played on it with the offensive prowess that it had.
Hey, Jamie, you talked about the camaraderie and missing that. And we've been talking a lot this week about the locker room or the clubhouse and what a beautiful place it can be. People from different backgrounds getting along and learning to get along. But tell us about some of your favorite teammates that you've had over the years.
Well, I'm probably going to repeat myself because I'll bet anybody else that you ask these questions, you're probably going to hear the same names. Jay Buhner was a great clubhouse leader. He's a great teammate. He knew what to say, when to say it, and how to say it. If you needed a pat on the back, he was really good at that. If you needed a kick in the pants, he gave you that kick in the pants. But he did it in a loving way. He wasn't trying to be demonstrative towards you. Junior was a fun-loving guy. Edgar was very quiet. Ichiro was very quiet. Mike Cameron liked to have fun. He had that, you know, that big vibrant smile. Randy did things quietly. Alex, you know, he was a young player. He was trying to, in my opinion, just trying to watch and see how to do things. So, I mean, I think everybody had their own little way of doing things. Danny Wilson was a guy that, you know what, he knew how to say things and when to say things. John Olerud, very quiet. So Norm Charlton, a little more boisterous. So, I mean, everybody, but that's what made the teams that we had made them click. because we had guys that weren't afraid to step up and say things. We had a manager that wasn't afraid to step up and say things. He wasn't afraid to step on people's toes because the players knew that Lou cared. And that was the biggest thing. And Lou wanted to win. And so did we. And, you know, it's always nice when you got a manager on your side that you feel like he's fighting for you.
Jamie, over the years, I'm sure you faced a lot of really good batters when you're on the mound. Is there anybody that you kind of just look forward to? Like, look, I want to get this guy, or you knew that it was going to be a battle. Was there anyone you just enjoyed facing?
I enjoyed facing them all, but there's some guys that really gave me some trouble. Actually, I'm going to have dinner with Mark Kotze tonight, and he's one of the guys that wore me out. Bernie Williams was a challenge for me. Manny Ramirez was a challenge for me. Early in my career, Mike Schmidt, I'm aging myself now, but Mike Schmidt was a challenge for me. Chili Davis at the end of his career was a big challenge for me. Early in his career, I don't think he hit me very well. And then as he started to mature and started to sit on pitches and got smarter as a hitter, he became a real good hitter for, you know, when I was facing him. So, you know, and you know, the crazy thing with hitters is that, you know, they're either hot or cold. And when they're hot, you know, sometimes it really doesn't matter what you throw them, they're going to hit it. And when they're cold, you could, I got to believe when they're cold, you can almost tell them what's coming and they struggle to hit it. So Junior was a tough out. You know, when I was with the Orioles and Boston, Junior was a tough out as well. But, you know, a lot of talented players that I had the good fortune to play with and against over the course of my career.
Speaking with Mariners legend Jamie Moyer here with Bob, Dave, and Moore. Michael Bumpus in for Jim Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle. Jamie, 2001 was a season unlike any other out here in Seattle. You guys win 116 games. You win 20 games that year. I mean, Freddie Garcia won 18 games. Paul Abbott wins 17. It felt like the team, you just expect, as a fan, I remember watching TV and just going, well, they're going to win. Just every night. It was stunning when you lost. What was that season like for you?
Same way. It was pretty awesome, but I'm serious. You know, after we got into like May or June, we all felt the same way. We're going to win today, you know. And what a great feeling to have when you walk in the clubhouse door, and you know, having that feeling rather than playing on teams that are going to struggle to win 60 or 70 games. That's the doldrums. So yeah, but the energy that was in that clubhouse, the confidence that was in that clubhouse, the brotherhood that was in that clubhouse, the excitement, and then on top of it, the fans were picking up on it as well. So it really, I think it was a great situation for the organization. It was a great situation for the players. And the city supported us unbelievably well. So it, I think, and just, you know, being in town when we were in town, you could see the bounce in people's steps. You know, because of the excitement of the team. And I'm sure it was that way when the Hawks were winning or when they went to the Super Bowl. But, you know, that winning environment is such a just a healthy, healthy environment for teams.
Hey, Jamie, you were a, what they call a crafty lefty, right? It was about control and mixing up your pitches.
Yeah.
And who are some of these, who are some of the younger guys? Have you had guys come up to you that are similar type of pitchers and try to pick your brain?
I did as an active player, not so much anymore. You know, the game's a lot different now than it was back when I went, you know, back in the era that I played in. But, you know, John Halama and I spent a lot of time talking, became really good friends with Jeff Passero, even though we necessarily weren't the same style of pitcher. But we spent a lot of time talking. You know, the guys that were, that didn't throw as hard, or they, we get, sometimes we get the label, the soft tossers. You know, you tend to find that they congregate even with on opposing teams sometimes during batting practice, or you get a phone call in the clubhouse, you might get somebody, asking questions about, you know, a change-up grip or certain pitches or when they throw pitches or, you know, mechanical things, things like that. So that, to me, that's the fun part of the game, talking about those types of things, especially with teammates and guys that are going through that same battle, because we all, you know, we're all trying to get to that same result, but it seems like everybody does it a little differently. So being able to have that kind of communication and conversation, learning about what other people do and how they do it, was always pretty interesting.
Hey, Jamie, back to 2001 for just a moment. You guys, you mm-hmm. win the division series. You take out the Cleveland Indians again, 116 wins in the regular season. And then obviously it doesn't go the way anybody expects against the New York Yankees. How, in a season like that, that's just record setting, it's unprecedented. And we, along with you, everybody expects you to win every game. When it doesn't result in at least a trip to the World Series, when you look back on it now, do you feel like, man, we came up short, we were better than that, we should have won, or, hey, it was still just one of the golden moments of my career?
I think we were better than that, but, you know, the other thing that you have to respect, or at least maybe not respect it, but at least look at it, you know, the teams that are playing across the field had pretty darn good years and were pretty talented teams. And, you know, when you get to the playoffs, not always does the best team win, or especially if you're the home fan, you're thinking, well, you know, the better team didn't win, but you know, it's that team that can play the most consistent, and whether it's a 5-game series or a 7-game series, or they get the breaks, or the, you know, the ball rolls the right way, or somebody puts, you know, drives in a run from third, whatever it might be. So, you know, to me, it's, you got to play the game, and that's what to me makes the game so exciting, because you can sit and watch, especially that particular year. We, like you said, we won 116 games, and people think, oh, this is going to be a cakewalk. Well, it's not a cakewalk, because once you get to the playoffs, everybody starts on an even slate. So, yeah, and you know, hey, would I say that season was a failure? No, I wouldn't say it was a failure, but, you know, it was a pretty tough pill to swallow to have that type of season and then not at least make it to the World Series, yes.
Jamie, tell us where you're at nowadays and what's been going on in your life lately.
I'm besides staying home. Sunny California, San Diego, California, trying to enjoy kids. I've got 2 children in high school, 2 in middle school. All 2 of them are out of school for the summer. The other 2 are out after next week. And, you know, trying, like everybody is, trying to figure out this COVID stuff, trying to figure out ways to stay healthy and try to keep kids busy and keep kids positive and keep kids focused. And, you know, it's a little nicer down here because, you know, we get a lot of sun at this time of the year. So we are allowed outside. We just have to be careful where we congregate and that we don't get in too large of groups. But looking forward to a nice, healthy summer here in San Diego and enjoying life.
Yeah, definitely a good place to be in San Diego. Jamie, 2003, you win 21 games. You're 40 years old. And, you know, that bucks the trend in all pro sports. That's considered old for a professional athlete. Your ERA is just a shade over 3. I mean, a brilliant year for you. You guys went over 90 games. What was that? That had to carry a certain amount of satisfaction, being a guy that many in that world would feel like, well, 40's past his prime, and you win, you right. go 21-7 that year. That had to feel really good.
Right. Oh, it does. And, you know, and especially when you have people that are always second guessing. And, you know, again, I'm not crying about it, but it was basically my whole career. I had people tell me what I couldn't do. But I came to the realization as I started to get a little bit older and started to mature a little bit, as long as you have an opportunity, as long as you have a uniform on, you know what? You are in somewhat control of your destiny. But that control starts with being prepared and being healthy and focusing on what you need to focus on, not what other people are telling you you can and can't do. And I think, and the other big thing for me, I always believe, is you got to bring something to the ballpark every day. You got to contribute. And as a starting pitcher, people say, well, how do you do that? Well, I might not be playing or competing in the game, but I'm preparing for a start, number one. Number two, I'm around teammates. I can be supportive of teammates. And as we alluded to before, conversations that you can have that you can either learn from or you can give to in supporting your teammates, I think that's important. So, you know, as I said, as I got a little bit older and get a little wiser, a little more mature, and start to understand that that's a big part of it too. But the downside of a starting pitcher is, you know what, when you have a bad game, you've got to sit for 4 days and stew on it or learn how to have thick skin. And you really have to refocus on, okay, what's my next goal? And my next goal is the next day and the next day and the next day and the next day to prepare for your next start.
You know, one thing in talking to you over the years, Jamie, and I would hear people ask you about this, and I always wondered in the back of my head, man, he's got to be sick of hearing about this. He's got to be sick of answering questions about velocity. And that was always, you know, in a league of throwers where guys are throwing 96, 97, they go, well, look at Moyer. There's arc to the ball, and I could hit him. Everybody felt like they could hit you, and it was always about your velocity. Did that ever get on your nerves talking about it?
No, it didn't get on my nerves. The funny part about it, I'd like to – you know, and share with people when they, you know, ask those questions, they say, grab a bat and give it a try. Because it's not as easy as it looks. But, you know, what I also learned as, again, as I took a lot of lumps early in my career, the first several years of my career, I'd go through some good spells, but I'd go through some bad spells. And, you know, what I started to learn was who I was as a pitcher. And when I started to learn that and started to understand that, that's, I think, what allowed me to, you know, my eyes to open. And, you know, look, I had a great catcher that worked with me, and Danny Wilson. You know, I can't take all the credit. Danny Wilson was one heck of a catcher, probably the most favorite catcher I've ever had in my career. And, you know, most of the seasons that I played in Seattle, we had a pretty darn good defense. And we also had a pretty darn good offense. So without that cast of characters around me, I'm not attaining whatever you're choosing to talk, 21 wins, 20 wins, 116 wins, a 3 ERA. I don't attain that. So, again, I learned to come to appreciate that. But I also, again, going back to, I need to bring something to the ballpark. And that's what was my huge responsibility, because – bringing something to the ballpark each and every day and grinding with my teammates, whether I was the starting pitcher that day or not, but being in the mix is to me, that's what a teammate does, and that's what a team player does.
Last one before we let you go, Jamie. I mean, such a long, huge career that you had, so much success. Is there one year, one game, one moment that stands out above any other when you reflect back on your career?
Wow. Well, I mean, I'm going to have to say winning a World Series. I mean, that's, you know, think back to when you, and anybody listening, think back to when you were a little boy and the dreams that you had, right? You wanted to be a Major League Baseball player. And then on top of that, you dream about yourself getting the big hit or being a pitcher and, you know, making a start in a game or making a big play. I mean, to me, that's the pinnacle. That's why you play the game of baseball. You know, it's not about the accolades. It's not about the money. That all, believe me, takes care of itself. And you can allow those things to be distractions. But if you really focus on the game and what the game is about and contributing to your team and contributing to the game, I think to me, that's the most special thing. But, you know, having some of the wonderful teammates that I played with, you know, obviously played with a ton of great players in Seattle. But I had a great opportunity to play with a guy by the name of Nolan Ryan. I learned so much from him, and not necessarily about pitching, but how to be a professional, how to train, how to work out, how to be humble, how to be respectful. Played with Andre Dawson a year when he signed a blank contract with the Chicago Cubs and went out and had an MVP season. You know, he's the National League MVP. And to watch him play that season was unbelievably special. And the way he treated me and my teammates was awesome. And then the other one for me was Cal Ripken. You know, when I had the good fortune of being a teammate of his when he broke Lou Gehrig's games played streak. Again, what a humble gentleman, a great baseball man, and a great teammate. And, you know, so when you have the ability to play around people like that, you learn so much, and it's so invaluable. You can't put a money value on that. And it's, again, it's not because of the accolades that I just mentioned, the no-hitters, the 5,000 strikeouts, the 300 wins, the MVP season, and, you know, the breaking Lou Gehrig's streak. It's the people that they were. And when you have good people like that, it makes a big difference. And I can go, and I can honestly say the years I played in Seattle, when Pat Gillick was bringing in free agents and adding to the team, and, you know, we had let Alex go, Randy left, and Junior left, right, unfortunately. But they were replaced with high-character people. And I will go to my grave saying that those high-character people came in and really did a fantastic job of fitting in, and we all made it work together.
Great stuff. The great Jamie Moyer has been our guest here with Bob, Dave, and Morris. Our Mariners Legend Week continues here on 710 ESPN Seattle. Jamie, always fun to talk to you. We really appreciate you taking the time with us. The fans love you. The listeners love you. You're a legend here. You always will be. Stay safe out there. Stay healthy. And hopefully we down the road we get a chance to talk again.
All right, guys. Thanks for having me on. And likewise to you and the fans. Everybody stay healthy. Stay safe. And let's keep our fingers crossed that we're going to see some baseball this year.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, Jamie. There you go, everybody. Jamie Moyer, one of the greats, two-time 20-game winner, World Series winner. Really, really fun conversation with him. The 5 o'clock refresh is brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light, made to chill. Well, some news surrounding Drew Brees in the NFL. He's taken a lot of shots from his peers in the league. We'll talk about what he said and what's being said back and forth. It's an interesting story coming up with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Coming up in a little less than 15 minutes, we'll talk about that crowded tight end room for your Seattle Seahawks. It's Bob, Dave, and Moore with Michael Bumpus in for Jim Moore this week on 710 ESPN Seattle. Really fun conversation with Jamie Moyer in the previous segment. If you missed that, you can check it out on the podcast page at 710sports.com after the show. News happening in the NFL, a statement from Drew Brees has drawn the ire of a lot of people, a lot of his peers. You can go down the list from Doug Baldwin to Richard Sherman to Malcolm Jenkins to Booger McFarland. I mean, it's a long list of people coming after Drew Brees today. Cut number four, here's the comment from Drew Brees that sort of triggered the firestorm.
I will never agree with anybody disrespecting the flag of the United States of America or our country. Let me just tell you what I see or what I feel when the national anthem is played, and when I look at the flag of the United States, I envision my two grandfathers who fought for this country during World War II, one in the Army and one in the Marine Corps, both risking their lives to protect our country and to try to make our country and this world a better place. So every time I stand with my hand over my heart, looking at that flag and singing the national anthem, that's what I think about. And in many cases, it brings me to tears.
So that was in response to being asked about Colin Kaepernick now and reflecting on him kneeling during the anthem. And obviously, a lot of people bring up the fact that you had a lot of African-Americans fighting in those same wars for those very same things that weren't afforded the same rights when they got back home, that were told to go into different restrooms and different restaurants and different hotels and different drinking fountains and things like that. But they fought the same fight. And Malcolm Jenkins, obviously a teammate and somebody that is very vocal, cut number eight. Here's his response to that.
The onslaught of that we have to deal with is crazy right now. Drew Brees, if you don't understand how hurtful, how insensitive your comments are, you are part of the problem. To think that because your grandfather's served in this country and you have a great respect for the flag, that everybody else should have the same ideals and thoughts that you do is ridiculous. And it shows that you don't know history. Because when our grandfathers fought for this country and served, and they came back, they didn't come back to a hero's welcome. They came back and got attacked for wearing their uniforms. They came back to people, to racism, to complete violence. And then here we are in 2020 with the whole country on fire. Everybody witnessing a black man dying at the hands, being murdered at the hands of the police. With this, just in cold blood for everybody to see. The whole country is on fire. the first thing that you do is criticize one's peaceful protest. That was years ago when we were trying to signal a sign for help and signal for our allies and our white brothers and sisters, the people we consider to be friends, to get involved. It was ignored. And here we are now with the world on fire, and you still continue to first criticize how we peacefully protest because it doesn't fit in what you do and your beliefs, without ever acknowledging that a fact that a man was murdered at the hands of police in front of us all, and that it has been continuing for centuries, that the same brothers that you break the huddle down with before every single game, the same guys that you bleed with and go into battle with every single day, go home to communities that have been decimated. Drew, unfortunately, you're somebody who doesn't understand their privilege. You don't understand the potential that you have to actually be an advocate for the people that you call brothers.
So there you go, an emotional response from Malcolm Jenkins. And, you know, this is, guys, another one of those tough conversations where people come at it from all sides and you know, trying to interpret the actions of one player and what he had in his mind and who he was disrespecting. You know, I remember when this was going on, talking to some of the guys that I trained with in jiu-jitsu were, you know, in the military or had been in the military, just asking, you know, hey, how do you take this? Are you offended by this? Do you take this as an affront? Do you take this? And I had one of them say, it's not how I would do it, but it's what I fought for. It's what I fought for, that freedom to make that statement. He's doing it peacefully. I don't take it as a sign of disrespect, even though that's not how I would do it. The other was very vocal in that, no, I'm not offended by this at all because I don't think it's about me as a military member. I don't believe it's about the flag. I understand he's trying to draw attention to a bigger problem that he feels is not being given the attention it deserves. So just in talking to people that, you know, I don't want to speak for military members, and they don't all share the same opinion. And I was reading responses to what Doug Baldwin posted and people saying, hey, I'm a 26-year military veteran. I'm a 25-year military veteran. And I, you know, kind of echoing the same thing. Some of them said, I don't agree with it, the method, but this is what I fought for. And I didn't take it personally. So it's interesting. I think Drew Brees has been a very good guy in society. He's done a lot in terms of his philanthropy and charity. I think he missed the mark on this one when being asked a question about it and turned it into his grandfathers and what they fought for without really thinking about, well, you've got other grandfathers out there that didn't have the same skin color that fought for the very same things and they weren't afforded the same things when they got back after that fight.
Well, I don't want to live in a country where you can't protest the flag. So now, would that be my choice? You know, probably not. But I also don't want to live in a country where you can't express your own opinion. But come on, man, this was really, really, really poor timing, really poor timing for him to come out with that. And so, you know, he's going to have to to answer to this, and you know, his own teammates, and I'm hoping that he can make it right. But yeah, it was just, you know, it is his opinion, right? But look, it is a very bad time for that, really bad time. So, and you know, and I don't want to call him tone deaf or anything like that, because you know, that's something that gets thrown around. But I just the judgment there, it pissed me off, you know, that he did that. So yeah, it's unfortunate, and I felt like we were starting to kind of have some good conversations and coming together, and hopefully, and I feel like this just reignited everything, and it, yeah, again, I was not happy when I saw that earlier today.
Yeah, I don't think Drew Brees is a bad person. I don't think that he doesn't know what's going on. I'm with you, Dave. I think the timing is horrible. And it's frustrating when people lean on that. Well, my grandfather fought. Okay, I can go that route. My dad was in the military for 25 years. My uncle in the Army. My other uncle in the Navy. My other uncle in the Air Force. So we got all branches covered, right? And they don't see a problem with kneeling. And I think that people, if you see a problem with kneeling during the national anthem, you're making it into something that it isn't. You're making it into something that you want it to be. And the first thing I thought about when it comes to kneeling, I'm a football player, right? What do you do when someone gets hurt? in high school, at least. You kneel. You take a knee. You show some type of respect, right? When I look at royalty or whatever, back in the medieval times, what do you do when you show respect? You kneel, right? So we're not – people are taking the kneel and they're making it into guys saying, forget this country, forget the military, forget all that. No, the kneel was just to make you aware, to make you start thinking about it, to make you start having conversations about it. You're entitled to your own opinion. Yeah, you don't like it because you feel it's disrespectful to the flag. I'm just here to say nobody's thinking about the flag when they're kneeling. They're thinking about the guys who are dying, the injustices for everybody, you know, specifically the black community, because we've been the ones who've been under the most scrutiny and pressure when it comes to this, to the police and all that stuff. But it's not about the flag, you know. Feel the way you want about it, but understand what the message truly is. And I'm with you, Dave. I just think that the timing's off. Drew Brees, I'm sure he's going to think about it. I hear that he spoke to Jenkins and they've exchanged words and stuff. And at this point, they got to come together and try to understand each other, because it sounds like Drew Brees just doesn't really understand what the whole thing was about. It's not about the flag. It's not about the military. It's about exactly what happened last week to George Floyd that's been happening for hundreds of years in this country.
Yeah, and we're really late for the break. I want to come back and continue. I got a question for Dave, and just to pick up on this, and I think it's a healthy conversation. You guys can weigh in, 710-710 to the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. Got a question for Dave when we come back with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Some good text coming in, 710-710 to the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. And one of them, sort of almost what I was going to ask Dave and Bump here, just as guys that have been in professional locker rooms, and from the 253, thank you guys for being able to have a discussion, even though opinions may differ. And that's the key to all of this, is just listening. Doesn't mean, hey, we're trying to convince you we're right and you're wrong. It's right. You know, you're sharing opinions, man, and you can have a civil debate. It's not — some people get up in arms, and we've seen some of those as well. Help yourself, whatever works for you. But the question they are asking, what I was going to ask you, is, you know, for when players kneel and it does create some level of controversy, you know, Groz and I talked a lot about this, and Groz would always say, why are they playing the anthem? Why? Why is that a thing now? It's not always been a thing. It's not like, well, this dates back to 1940, and that's not true. It's not true. It started in 2009, and it was bought and paid for by the U.S. military. This was not, hey, you know what, we feel so patriotic, we all want to stand out there and do this. No, no, no. This was bought and paid for. I was looking it up. It started in 2009, and just for people that aren't aware of the history. Yeah, you didn't, I was going to bring that up. You know, when you were playing, you weren't out there. In 2009, NFL players began standing on the field for the national anthem before the start of primetime games. Before this, players would stay in the locker room except for the Super Bowl and after 9/11. In 2015, Senator John McCain and Jeff Flake released a report revealing the Department of Defense had spent $6.8 million between 2012 and 15 on what the senators called paid patriotism events before professional sports games, including flag displays honoring military, reenlistment ceremonies, and the DOD justified money paid to 50 professional teams by calling it part of their recruiting strategy. So it's sort of treated like you're you know, sullying this long-standing tradition of standing out there. No, it was paid for, and it started in 2009. But is it something you look at and go, you know, and you still, to this day, there are players that will wait in the locker room and then come out after the anthem is done being played. It's not as noticeable, obviously, but it's happening to this day. What would your, as guys put yourself back in that locker room, what would your preference be?
Well, I would definitely go out and stand up for it, for the national anthem, but that's just my personal choice. And I think there's one flaw, and this is just a debating point. Okay, there's lots of people saying no, it's not about the military and disrespecting war veterans. It's about this. Well, you can't show somebody a square and tell them it's a circle. Okay, if they're going to see a square, they're going to see a square. So I just always thought that was kind of a flawed argument where you go, well, it's not about that. It's about this. Well, people are going to see what they want to see, and they're going to have an opinion on it. So, and I'm not saying, I mean, look, I respect everything that is going on. Like I said, I don't want to live in a country where you can't protest. Because then now all of a sudden, but I'm also, I don't want to live in a country where you can't have an opinion. Because now you're taking away people's freedom. You're taking away their rights to think differently than you. And, you know, it's not easy, man. This is not easy, this whole thing. America, I mean, I'll paraphrase from one of my favorite movies. It's a movie called The American President. And he was saying about freedom and everything is you got to want it bad, man. I mean, if you want free speech, you gotta fight for somebody's right to say something that makes your blood boil, and that's freedom, and it's very pure. So I'm just looking at it from like the debate standpoint, and everybody has a lot of different opinions and everything, and that's fine. You can have that. That's what this country is about. My biggest problem with this whole thing is that Drew Brees should have known way better than that to bring that up at this time. This is not the time for that. Yes, he can have that opinion. He's not evil for having that opinion. He's not evil in general. He just should not have done that. It really, again, it pissed me off. But you know, I'm just looking at, you know, some of the flaws in this, and we all think, well, there's this and that. You know, this is just from my standpoint. You know, like I said, it's about freedom. Freedom is tough. Freedom is difficult. And especially in a time like this, you know, and we've been talking to Ray and Michael and all the things that are going on. You know, I don't think anybody wants this, man. We all are trying to get together and bring it together. And I felt like, you know, we're starting to have some good dialogue. And then Drew Brees comes in and says that. I was so frustrated by that.
Yeah, I'm with you, Dave. Freedom is tough, man. Like, it's tough. You get. Here in America, you can say what you want. You can be who you want to be. You can believe what you want to believe in. And to me, someone kneeling doesn't affect me. You know, it doesn't rub me the wrong way. If you have a message you want to get out, it's peaceful. I'm all good with it. You know, I've been walking through tunnels and had people yell at me and call me, oh my God, every name in the dang book. And I just rolled it off my shoulder, whatever. You know, I mean, that guy's not going to get arrested for that. He's not breaking any laws. He's not, you know, he's trying to get under my skin. And I think that because we have this freedom, you know, people feel like they can say anything, they can do anything, and they can. That's the thing. And they can actually do it and not be in trouble for it. It doesn't mean you have to agree with it. You know, again, I don't agree with Drew Brees. Am I a Drew Brees hater? No, I'll watch him play on Sunday. You know, I think he made a mistake. I think that he was insensitive at the time. I think he's smart enough to go back and be like, you know what, maybe I would have done it differently. Even if he doesn't feel that way, that's his right. He's okay to do that. It doesn't mean I have to agree with him. You know, I think that the problem is people want everyone to be on the same wave, on the same page. And that's just not going to happen. It's never going to happen. But what we can do is respect people's freedoms to do exactly what they want to do. If you're not breaking any laws, then it shouldn't bother you that much. You know, if you're trying to bring awareness to something, that's all he was trying to do. Again, you can feel the way you want to. You can not like me because I don't feel like kneeling was a big deal. You can not like Kaepernick, but what you can't do is say that he's a criminal, he's a bad person for that. And that's just what it is. Agree to disagree, but we can walk down the street and I can disagree with you. I can see you tomorrow and be like, what's up, man? You having a good day? How you doing? You know, I don't agree with you with that, but I still want you to live a good life, to be happy, to be healthy. You know, we just don't have to agree with everything. And let's not ignore what's going on right now either. We can't ignore it. It's out there.
No, that's you're exactly right. It's well put. To me, there's always room for civil debate. There's always room for it. Differing opinions, it doesn't mean you're going to change minds, like we said. But I think the key we've learned in all of this, and even before Brees, is you got to listen. I'm not silent. I'm listening. I'm listening. And I think that's huge for a lot of people out there. So appreciate a lot of really good texts coming in. Appreciate the respectful tone and everything going on, even those that don't agree. That's totally fair. Totally fair. So really good stuff. We're going to come back. We'll talk some more football with the professor, John Clayton. He joins us next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Wow, you sure know a lot of stuff.
It's great to learn.
Because knowledge is power.
As we tell you each and every day, lots of learning taking place on this show, and today would be no exception. Curtis Rogers here to tell us exactly what we learned. Curtis?
Bob, great to be here with you guys. I don't often get to sit in with you guys, so it's great to have a nice change of pace. Always.
And this is the last time we're going to talk to you as a single man.
That's true, yeah.
It's all over this weekend.
Yes. Yeah, the royal wedding.
Don't put it that way.
Taking place on Friday night.
That's fair. I shouldn't have put it. That sounded negative. It's all over after this. Your single days are finished. You become a happily married man coming up on Friday. So our last opportunity to speak with our buddy Curtis Rogers before he gets married to his lovely bride. So big day for everybody, and we're proud of you, man. Excited for you.
Thank you. Thank you, Bob. Thank you, Bump. Thank you, Dave. I mean, yeah, it feels like just yesterday I was walking through these halls as just a young tadpole, and now I'm...
a young intern that Colin Paisley said, "You're here to be seen, not heard."
Actually, I think people thought that that C. Raj was like a mass murderer or something. Wasn't that the rumor?
That was the groomer. That was the groomer that would say that.
I think. What?
Yeah, Danny said that to you. I think Danny said, "You know, I think you're a serial killer, right?" Or something like that.
Yeah, maybe it's good to it makes people leave you alone, that's for sure. That's not bad.
Yeah, I was going to say, you should have told Danny, don't test me, man.
Yeah, you're first. What did we learn today?
Well, we start off by learning that maybe we should just ask Jadeveon Clowney what he's going to do.
Man, we should just call Clowney and see if he wants to come in and have a talk about this, huh? Because that'd be much easier. I mean, there's so much.
I'm sure nobody's approached
this guy right now. Yeah, you know, not at all. But, you know, I'd love to talk with the guy. Clowney, if you're listening, come holler at us, man. We love to talk.
Yeah, we're here for you. We've got open ears and open hearts. We're going to sit here and take in whatever you've got to tell us, man. We look forward to that conversation. Yeah, leave it to Bump to bring up the obvious that we just haven't thought of yet. Let's call him. Let's bring him in. Hey, what would you like to do, Jadeveon? I'm sure he'd be more than willing to have a long discussion about his desires, where he'd like to be, how much he'd like to make. Let's make that happen.
I think we waited about 5 months too long to have Bumpus replace Jim Moore.
Poor Jim. What else?
I like
learn,
how
Curtis?
You've been calling him the whole week, the vacationing Jim Moore. You've slipped that in every time. I love
it. Yeah. Well, it's because I don't want anybody to think, what's wrong with Jim? Where did he go? Did he get fired? Did he quit? What happened? You know, you got to be literal with people. Otherwise, there's going to be a sense of panic.
We also learned today that Dave, he's getting better at self-censoring.
And as a matter of fact, his teammates loved him for playing through injury. So, I thought this has to be something. But, yeah, I didn't see anything, Bump, where it looked to me like, oh, yeah, look at that guy. He's playing on a leg and a, well, I can't say that. It's something the coaches used to say all the time. But, you know, in other words, you know, this
easy,
guy's
Dave.
Playing
easy.
On a bad knee. Yeah, I know. It's a family show.
Good catch there, Dave. I'm sure Curtis had
to say.
Curtis had his finger on the dump button. I'm certain of it.
Oh yeah. I having ran a board for Dave, the dump button's not very far away.
Now stop it, C. Raj. There's probably only been like two or three times, and one time you missed one.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah,
we did let one
that
slip.
That was my bad.
Yeah.
That's my bad. My bad. You're not.
One got by the goalie there? What happened?
Yeah. It was probably about, what, 3 or 4 years ago now? I don't know if any audio of it still exists. Who am I kidding? Audio of it absolutely exists, but.
Yeah, actually, Bob texted me. Bob texted me during the show and said, "Hey, what happened there?" And I was like, "Oh, no."
it's your worst nightmare as a broadcaster. And Bump, you haven't been doing this that long, but you've had a lot of moments in the seat. Have you ever come close to slipping?
Yes, I have. and I've said some embarrassing things to him the Seahawk pre and post game that my boys remind me of constantly. So, yeah, been there. Hopefully it doesn't happen again.
All right. What else have we learned, Curtis?
We finally learned today that Michael was able to find the way to Wyman's heart.
You know, I'm with the new rules. It's safer. But I tell you one thing. There is nothing like smacking a dude with your face mask, running through him, and hearing that sound. You know, that got the crowds going. But now we're smarter. We got more data out there. So if Pete Carroll can change at 60-something, I guess we all have to.
Listen to Bump, the savage wide receiver. Man, I love this side of Michael Bumpus.
You have a place in his heart forever now, Bump.
Hey, I was going back to my old safety days at Culver City High School. The Seahawks asked me to tackle a man in preseason. Didn't go well. They took me off that team. So it's been a while since I I really ran through somebody.
Yeah, you know,
they took me off that team.
Every offensive player deep down inside wants to play defense. You know, Michael Bumpus, we hear it from Brock Huard all the time when he starts talking about, you know, hammering a guy and running through his face and all that stuff. And I go, Brock, you never ran through anybody's face in your life, but you know that you want to. And, yeah, every offensive player deep down inside, there's a defensive player inside.
Now, was the reverse true for you, Dave? Did you? I know you played tight end.
Oh,
I
yeah.
think you said, but did you ever feel like, man, I want to catch a pass. I want to find my way into the end zone.
Listen, man, I love like throwing snowballs and rocks and stuff like that, and I fancy myself as a quarterback. I really do. I've got a good arm, and I think I'm pretty accurate. And yeah, so I've always kind of fancied, even to this day, I fancy myself a bit of a quarterback. You believe that?
How about that? Quarterback Dave Wyman. Be the one of the bigger, bulkier quarterbacks back there. You'd be shedding tackles, knocking people to the ground. You would have been a pre-Cam Newton Cam Newton. You would have been the Big Ben, one of those guys that was hard to bring down.
I probably would have just tucked it and tried to run every pass rusher over or something and been horrible.
Did we learn
Dave
anything else, Curtis?
A good high school wing T quarterback.
There you go. There you go.
That's all
Can't
we got for
this
Wednesday.
Get the
Wednesday.
Opportunity. All right. Good stuff. Want to thank our guests today, John Clayton, Sam Monson, and Jamie Moyer. That was a really fun conversation with the Mariner legend, Jamie Moyer. If you missed any of today's show, head to the podcast page at 710sports.com. Click the podcast button, then just click on our picture. It's all right there waiting for you. Really good stuff. Really great conversations. We appreciate the texters with some really, really you know, heartfelt thoughts on the text line. Some fun conversations. Difficult ones, but I think a lot of value to them the past couple days. So appreciate you guys. Appreciate the listeners. We're going to be back with you tomorrow right here with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.